You are listening to Upfront. I am Kat Brooks, filling in for Brian Edwards Tickert. Northern California is home to large numbers of white supremacist organizations. What does this mean for the political climate, organizers, and the safety of resistance? In studio with me this morning, I have two organizers. I have Cedric O'Bannon, a local organizer. Hello, Cedric. And I've got B, an anti-racist, anti-fascist organizer. Good morning, B.
Good morning, Kat.
Thank you both for being with me this morning. First, I just want to talk about the climate. And B, you've been doing this work for a while, I understand. What has been the climate of these groups coming to Northern California? What's going on?
Well, I mean, to put it into context, it seems like in the United States in general, but in California in particular, there's a massive polarization that's happening in the political spectrum. This is sort of like in the wake of the Black Lives Matter, the ascension of that movement, gaining power, wide criticism against the police and racist police practices. On the other side of that spectrum, white supremacist groups are taking up a narrative of self-victimization. And
what does that mean? Explain what that means to our listeners.
Their narrative of self-victimization basically means that they're painting themselves as being the victims of sort of like a narrative about white people are being oppressed by other people of color because we're now claiming our dignity, and they're not being prioritized and privileged in the ways that they used to be. And the way that they're used to being treated, excuse me, and that they need to reassert their privileges, which means the denial of our dignities in the streets and in the political and social arenas. So that's basically their narrative of self-victimization. So that polarization is becoming much bigger and wider as time goes on. What happened on June 26th in Sacramento was an attempt for them to finally materialize their politic. Now, these white supremacist groups, most of their presence is mostly online. And it's a very insular communication that they have with these other groups. So June 26 was an attempt for them to materialize their politic in the street, which is why anti-racist and anti-fascist organizers took it so seriously to prevent them from actually having that presence in the street.
So let's just take a step back. So traditionally, these groups are talking to each other online, spewing out hate across social media, and then they called for an action on June 26th in Sacramento at the nation's capital, right?
That's correct.
And then it wasn't just one group. So talk about then the organizing that led up to the counter-protests that happened in Sacramento that day.
So, I mean, basically, so people know, the three white supremacist groups that were meeting were the Traditionalist Workers' Party, the Ku Klux Klan, and a group called the Golden State Skinheads. So all three of these groups, it's hard to say what their level of organization was together prior to June 26th. But June 26th was an attempt for them to consolidate all of their political capital together that existed, again, mostly online, and materialize it into the streets. Now, I listened to the leader of the Traditionalist Workers' Party's podcast, and he basically claimed that if these white supremacist groups could meet in California, when, you know, a very liberal place in the United States, then they could meet anywhere in America. Mm. So their attempt was to break ground here first, and one of the harder places it is to exist as a white supremacist group, to prove to themselves and to prove to the people that are following their rhetoric that they could do it anywhere in the United States.
But don't they have ground in Northern California? I mean, that's like almost a scary place to drive. That seems to be, you know, that area, Sacramento, and in that area, and then through sort of the you know, Fresno,
the valley,
right? Yeah. That's sort of their stronghold as it is. Is that accurate?
That's pretty accurate in terms of the people that they're trying to recruit from. And again, this is mostly because it fits their narrative of self-victimization. Mm-hmm. White, poor, working-class people are being preyed upon by these white supremacist organizations to get them into their groups because they lack the political consciousness to criticize the actual institutionalized disenfranchisement that they're actually experiencing.
Cedric, people, if you were in, do engage in protests in Oakland or San Francisco in the Bay Area, you've likely seen Cedric with his live streamer and cameras out there. Why did you decide to go?
You know, for me, it was a natural extension of the police terror protests that I've been documenting for the last, 20-plus months. We've seen this phenomenon with the counter-protests against Trump. So it was, a natural extension for me to, try to be there in Sacramento and document what was happening. I'm against, these white nationalists and their terroristic attacks that we saw happen in Southern California. Mm-hmm. So I said, yeah, I should be there documenting.
We have just been joined on the phone by David Nywart. He is the Northwest correspondent for the Southern Poverty Law Center. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
David, can you paint a picture for us of these white extremist groups in America? Let's go beyond California for just a minute.
Sure. Well, in fact, it's important to understand that this is not just happening in California. It's happening everywhere. And a lot of it has to do with, there's no question that the Donald Trump campaign has absolutely revivified a lot of these previously moribund white supremacist organizations. However, it's also important to understand that this is a phenomenon that's been growing for a long time, and as you pointed out, these people are preying on people's economic insecurities, their frustrations, their anger, and they're really exploiting the failures of the democratic system to adequately provide for all of us. And it's what happens in an oligarchy. And honestly, in an oligarchy, they constantly, you'll find that they do this sort of thing where they're really kind of setting up the two. It's a wedge issue. It's a way of dividing working class people against themselves so that they can't ever unite to actually take on, the larger powers that be.
The
traditionalist youth movement, which is who we saw in Sacramento, and they will be in Cleveland, has been very active. They're calling themselves the alt-right. They've given themselves all kinds of trendy new names now. But really, it's just the same old ugly racism that, is not really an iota different than what Hitler promoted.
I was sort of struck by the fact that B talked about that there were skinheads there and there was the Klan there. Mm-hmm. Can you, just for our audience, so the difference between a skinhead and a Nazi or the Klan, and B, also feel free to jump in there.
Sure. Well, these are shades of difference. They all fundamentally believe kind of the same thing, but they'll have they have different flavors of racism, and that's essentially what we're talking about here. Neo-Nazis are, there's a lot of overlap, especially between neo-Nazis and skinheads and white nationalists, or which is what the, traditionalist youth movement call themselves. The nationalists tend to emphasize, their so-called promotion of the white race, but as always, with all of these organizations, they inevitably always descend into, the demonization and degradation of other races. Neo-Nazis and skinheads, they just hate everybody, there's a huge amount of overlap among them, and what can you say? I mean, they're just some of the most awful people on the planet.
I mean, one thing that I notice in terms of, like you're saying, shades of racism, there's also, different types of functions. Like, the traditionalist youth network and the traditionalist worker party kind of serve the function more of, the intellectual part of white racism. So they're the ones that are sort of talking about, they're like the academics. They're talking about the economy. They're talking about, the social structure, the political structure. Whereas, skinheads are more the boneheads. They don't have much of an intellectual analysis, but they will be out there and fight.
They're the muscle.
They're the muscle, exactly. They're the street presence. So, for example, on June 26th, the Traditionalist Workers' Party are the people who called for the demonstration, and Matthew Heimbach, was the leader of that group, was supposed to be there. Weeks prior, started to back out and backpedal from being there, and basically the only people who showed up were the goons and the thugs.
And What about the Klan? We just saw actually a news report that the Klan was walking around San Francisco, of all places, putting flyers in people's homes, warning them, you know, that the Black Panthers and the Black Lives Matter folks are on the rise. Are they normally in this mix, or are they still relevant, David?
Yes, yeah, they've always been. You know, we saw the Klan up here in northern Idaho back in the 70s and 80s, very tightly associated with the Aryan Nations folks. And so, yeah, no, they've been around. You know, people forget that the Ku Klux Klan was a national organization in the 1920s. They had chapters in every state in the country, and they actually controlled the legislatures of states such as Oregon and Indiana. They've been latent in the landscape for all this time, and you know, now they're starting to reemerge.
Cedric, as a Black man listening to this, what is your greatest concern?
I think my greatest concern is that we really expose the true narrative that's not getting out of the state-permitted violence. That, you know, the California Highway Patrol, to me, has just as much responsibility as the traditional Workers' Party in their ignorance and rhetoric.
Perfect. Let's go there. So on June 26th, The skinheads, these white nationalist groups, had called for this action. They got a permit. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
They got a permit to be there. The counter-protest decided to show up. What happens when the two groups meet?
Well, I mean, essentially what had happened was that, because they've had permits, the white nationalists have had permits to meet at the Capitol before.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had regularly been taking the steps of the Capitol. What was different about this time was that, again, they had pronounced that they were getting all of these other groups together, and this was going to be their way to, push forward and make their politic material. So they had originally been meeting at a parking garage and then being escorted by the police to the West Steps of the Capitol. This time, the counter-demonstrators had decided to meet at 9 a.m. The scheduled permit for the white nationalists was at 11 to start to set up. My hunch is that they had seen how many people were there to resist them and decided not to be in the parking garage. They had come from the opposite end of the West Steps. We had sent someone in the parking garage to see if there were any cars. There were no cars in there. So we basically decided that it was time to just move to the West Steps because we knew that that was the end goal of the place that they wanted to be. On the way to the West Steps, they were spotted with their banners, huge flags, shields.
Shields.
They came with shields. And when we had seen them, people were going over to confront them. And as soon as the two groups got close enough, they started stabbing people.
Where were the police?
The police at the time of the confrontation were nowhere to be found. They had actually showed up maybe 5 minutes or so after the first few stabbings had happened and knew that the people had gotten stabbed and continued to try and separate the two groups and basically made an exit route for the white supremacists to leave after they had stabbed people.
No attempts to arrest anybody?
Absolutely not.
No attempts to detain anybody?
No.
And they knew, because there was a permit, I just want to reiterate for our listeners, the police knew that these white nationalist groups were coming, and they clearly knew y'all were on the way because they monitor social media, right?
Absolutely.
But no police presence anywhere?
No police presence at the time of confrontation. There were hundreds of police in the area.
David, I want to throw that to you. Is this typical protocol for law enforcement when they know these actions are going to take place?
Well, I will say that what he's describing sounds like extremely questionable behavior on the part of the police. I've covered a lot of these kinds of rallies in the past, and it's unfortunate, but it's something that happens at all of them, that essentially the police wind up being pushed into the role of being bodyguards for these guys. Because typically what you have is just, you know, a group of 10 to 20 neo-Nazis or white supremacists and a huge crowd of several hundred counter-protesters. And so, yeah, the police wind up being sort of their bodyguards for them.
But it sounds like bodyguards. They were absent.
The failure to intervene is inexcusable, and I hope that, you know, there's an investigation of it by the Attorney General's office. There certainly should be an investigation of it.
I mean, beyond the criticism of the actual police, we can also see that the judicial system is also protecting white supremacists. In Anaheim, there are 9 counter-protesters who are now being charged with assault and battery, who are all injured by the KKK.
So in Anaheim, that was last year, I believe, right? That was last year. The Klan said that they held a demonstration in Anaheim that also turned violent. And so the Klan's not being charged, but the counter-protesters are.
That's right.
No, and what can I say? We as an organization, I can't speak for our legal team, but I can tell you that as an organization, we view these kinds of things, behavior by the judicial system, by the system in general, as extremely, very much a source of concern. And I think that they should be exposed as much as possible. But certainly, it's inappropriate for, as happened in Anaheim, we are talking Orange County, for that sort of thing to happen. And so, I can't speak for our legal team because we do take on these kinds of cases. But I do know that that sort of thing causes a lot of concern.
So
it's wrong. There's unquestionably, it's just dead wrong.
So, Cedric, you go out to film this action like you filmed so many actions before, and what happens to you?
Well, there certainly weren't any bodyguards around.
Not for you.
Yeah. I mean, there was hundreds and hundreds of police officers around, plus helicopters in the sky. This is a Sunday morning at about 11:45 on the South Side State Capitol lawn. There's children playing. One mother had brought her a child there because she homeschools her, to teach her about the Capitol. And they have to witness all this. Where is their bodyguards? We pay, you know, taxes for protection, you know, supposedly from terrorist organization like this white nationalist group. But it seems clear to me, historically and even now, that there's a direct relationship between these white nationalist organization and the law enforcement agencies that are supposed to be our bodyguards. These were the bodyguards that you see on a prison yard that just allow prisoners to shank each other until they die.
And you were stabbed.
Yeah, I was attacked with my camera. I was right trying to be at the front to get the confrontation of the two groups. And I was attacked. My camera rig broken in half. And when I went to go get my action camera off the ground, I was stabbed with the flagpole in the side. And if it wasn't for the anti-fascist counter-demonstrators, I wouldn't have had any bodyguards. Those were my bodyguards. Those are the people that came to defend me. And I thank the left for that, and I thank the left for their solidarity and staying together and having unity in actually defending us. So as a black man, I felt like, yeah, my only security was the left. The police were letting me get, they would have let me got stabbed to death there.
What about medical attention? So how many people were injured from the left, particularly, I'm asking?
There were 9 people injured in total.
And what was the racial makeup of those 9 people?
I'd say probably at least like 4 were African American. There were some other that I'm not really sure what their racial background.
But also people of color.
Also people of color. And then of the white people who were injured, most of them were trans.
Right, trans folks.
Trans or queer folks.
Right. So then what was the medical attention? What happened? There's people are bleeding, clearly. And what did law enforcement do?
So well, there's 2 parts to the medical attention. Part of it was part of the actual organizing effort. A lot of the organizing effort was very inclusive in the sense to not make people feel like fighting racism and fighting fascism meant that you had to be on the front line alone. So there was a lot of legal support that was going on, people answering phones, and there were also medics who were trained weeks prior to the demonstration, because we were afraid that it was going to come to this type of confrontation. So the first responders were actually people from the anti-fascist, anti-racist side that dealt with people's injuries. So mainly just clotting the blood, holding the wounds, and then the ambulance came. Law enforcement just basically got the medics away from the people who were injured.
I don't understand either. But no, really, say that again. The law enforcement kept the medics from attending to the people who were injured?
The medics were the first responders and were doing their job and tending to the wounded. As soon as the police came up, they tried to separate the medics from the people who were wounded.
Wow.
Wow.
David, a response to that?
Yeah, all I can say is wow. You know, I mean, this is the first I've heard that. So
maybe something your legal team should look into.
Yeah, absolutely.
There has been some community investigation, so I want to continue to sort of unravel this thread in the last couple minutes that we have about collusion between the police and these white nationalist groups. I've seen pictures on Facebook of people that were stabbers, right? Information, their names, their faces. The community's really done this work. What arrests have been made?
Zero, to my knowledge, unless Cedric, you know of any.
No.
What community? Go ahead.
They said the investigation is still going on right now.
Investigation is ongoing. Have they questioned you?
They came to interrogate me before. When I was in the hospital and, you know, I asked them to return my SIM card, they came back with the SIM card erased. And, you know, they asked me if I wanted to press charges. I said yes. And I've never heard from them since.
So I just want to go back to the SIM card issue very quickly. So you, when you went to the hospital, you had your camera and your SIM card.
Yes.
And in the process, we won't go into detail, but in the process, right, the SIM card gets taken by law enforcement.
Yes.
And you have it back, but...
Yeah, it was erased. You know, somehow crazy, they left a note that they had took it, you know, 2 days before they got a search warrant to take it. And so I was able to have them return it, but it, you know, it was erased, you know, trying to see if we could recover it now.
Just one last thought from each of our guests. We are living in incredibly politically charged times. We're clearly going to see more of this. David, from your perspective, what should people be doing to protect themselves?
Well,
can I say one thing real quick?
Yeah, I think it is important to stand up to white supremacists and people like that. I do think it's, you know, what can I say? Certainly the best demonstration, counter-protest I ever saw was one where they chose not to confront them violently, but instead showed up to make fun of them, showed up in clown suits, and it turned into a festive affair, and I think it changed the whole atmosphere.
B, what do you think?
Of the thing. And honestly, it infuriated the Nazis far more than a straight counter-protest did. A straight counter-protest actually is exactly what they want.
B, 20
they
seconds, what do you
think?
I mean, in my opinion, I think that we're not necessarily trying to stop white nationalists from meeting up because we think their ideology is going to spread. Mainly their ideology is racist and is a form of terrorism and should be confronted by all and any means necessary.
Cedric, 30 seconds. You have the last word.
You know, stop state violence. You know, don't even give the terrorists a permit.
That does it for today's show. Upfront is a production of the KPFA News Department. Thank you to our guests for being here. We air weekday mornings at 7 a.m. and post information about our topics and our guests online at kpfa.org, where you can also dig through our archives, subscribe to the show as a podcast, and connect to us on social media.